an eight song kind of record or whatever the whatever they call it now. And I figured it would, what better time than now, even though, you know, it's not even 6 months since I released the last thing. But I mean, I went almost 11 or 12 years without releasing anything, so might as well just pile it on while we're
That's right. Working, so. Yeah, that is the thing about with you and music. Like, it took you, you were like, I wouldn't say on a sabbatical from everything. I mean, some people need, some people are like, they're very prolific. They're machines or whatever circumstance in their life where they can just turn, okay, here, 5 months, here's another thing. 5 months, here's another thing. 5 months, another thing.
Right, right.
Others need a little bit of time, or they have other things in life that are going on. But having said that, I've been talking with other people about their periods of creativity, that sort of thing, over COVID. Mm-hmm. It's kind of strange that you are putting out two albums in a time when not a lot of people could put out music.
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of crazy because, like I said, I never planned it, and this record kind of came together. Like there was one week in August where I wrote like five of the, I think there's eight, maybe seven or eight songs on the record, but five of the songs, like every night I wrote something new, which has never happened. And I'm not usually, you know, I go in spurts where I'll write something, you know, a couple songs in a couple week period, but it was like one night, one song after another, and they weren't like bad. The people that I showed them to were like, oh, like this is pretty good. So, with the exception of maybe three that were written at the beginning, mid to like last month, it kind of really just came together really quickly. And, you know, I have a studio kind of set up in the house, and I always said that if I had a studio, like, why would you not, or if you had a studio at home, or if you had, you know, access to one, why wouldn't you be releasing music all the time? So, I mean, it just kind of worked out that way. And, you know, I was debating on whether or not I would release it, you know, now or wait until after Christmas or in February or whenever the case is. But, you know, I just actually was in the studio last night and I recorded something new. So now I'm kind of moving on to the next, whatever the next project's going to be. There's already new music happening, so I didn't want it to kind of be backlogged and have some really good songs kind of, you know, sat in the back burner or just never see the light of day for a little bit. So, what better time than now, I guess. You know, and hopefully people enjoy it. So
when you were, you know, having like what you just said there, it just, I just had this thought in my head. It was like, you're putting out all this stuff in a time where, not a lot of people could or had the ability to do it. And as you said, hey, if you got a studio, why not just do it? You're on a creative roll here, but is there a fear of holding off on stuff that you might lose interest in something that you've done?
I kind of get that. I remember I was chatting with a friend of mine that's also a musician, and we're talking about, you know, when I released the last record a year in San Francisco, you know, it was from my point of view, it did pretty well, you know, stream wise. I mean, I don't really know much about streaming and all that kind of stuff. I come from the, you know, CD sale days and record days, but you know, it looks like it's performing well for, you know, little to no kind of promotion and releasing it as basically as indie as you can get. But you know, we were chatting and he was telling me about somebody that I can't remember what the name of the artist was or whatever the case is, but you know, he would just release it, and once it's released, he's moving on to the next thing. And I didn't want that to kind of happen. So yeah, I guess I was kind of worried about losing interest in the songs, but the songs are also, and I don't like using this lightly, but probably the best stuff that I've written, like in my musical writing career. They're just they're really catchy. I like them. I don't normally listen to my own stuff, and you know, I find that I'm listening to the songs and they fit with everything else that I'm listening to, so that kind of gives me a good feeling that, you know, this is what I wanted to get out there for people. And you're right, there are some times where I'll just release stuff and then, or record stuff, and then down the road I'm like, oh yeah, there's that song that I wrote, you know, 6 months ago that I didn't even, you know, that I totally forgot about, and I didn't want to do that with this song. So yeah, I guess I wanted to kind of get them out there while I can. So
it's interesting that you say that, because I had a conversation with some friends last night about playing live, that sort of thing, as we're going into this environment of things are opening up, and you know, all the right. I mean, aside from the glitch in the numbers over the last couple of days of COVID cases, there are venues that are opening up for live. People are going to hockey games again, as an example.
Right.
But the conversation we had last night was, you know, sometimes when you're playing live, like whatever the circumstances are, it costs you more money to actually put on the show. Like it's
right.
I always think it's been like that when you first start out over the years. But now it's the conversation led to maybe just recording music and just selling it on your site. And when you want to do a show, people will pay a higher dollar to see you play that music.
I agree. I've had that issue with a couple shows in the past where, you know, there's a decent turnout and it just didn't you know, after paying all the bands and, you know, paying your musicians and stuff, you know, you had a big loss. And I think there's not many venues anymore that are available just in general, but actually, you know, cover that rental space fee, and you just kind of, you know, make the money off the door and that. But I've always had especially the last pre-COVID, like 5 years pre-COVID, I always had the rule of not playing many gigs locally, just because you want you want it to be an event when it shows up. I mean, when I first started, we were playing once a month at, you know, clubs all over the city, and that was great. But after a while, it just, you know, it doesn't have the same kind of push as like, oh, we're playing this weekend, and like, you know, we're hopefully going to have a show on the 4th and of December at the Casbah, and that'll be like the first show in almost 3 years for me. So, you know, it's definitely, it's a tough thing to navigate. But I mean, if you're not oversaturating the market, then you just hope that people will come out. And I mean it's tough to get people out pre-COVID, so you know, now this is a difference, you know, this is completely uncharted waters for a lot of people. So
I think you're on the right track with this show coming up at the Casbah, just because it's been a while that anyone's seen you, and the numbers are looking good, and people are double vaxxed, and it, sure, it's going to take, there's a little bit of like hesitation, like, is this like, do we go out now? Or are we doing this? But I think people are starting like to get over that. Like, I personally want to see everyone move forward, you know, let's move this forward now.
This, unfortunately, you know, our numbers are always going to be, there's always going to be cases. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do, at least in the immediate future, that's going to change the number of cases. Change that, the fact that COVID's going to be there. It's something that we got to live with. And, you know, if we're all responsible and we all can, you know, do our part and just be vigilant and not be ridiculous, and you know, there's some changes that need to be made, and I think it might be a good thing, in the sense that, you know, I don't like people that are sick, you know, I don't like people in my general 6 feet radius or whatever the case is on a good day. So, you know, I just, you know, I think we have to kind of just think about that kind of stuff. But yeah, we can't keep going on this way, and we can't keep going down this road, because, you know, we have to, we have to move on with this. I mean, we're not going to be, it's not going to turn into like Russia by January.
Right. Yeah. I look at it this now is that they're going to give us a booster shot and this eventually just becomes the seasonal cold. You got to keep an eye on it. Right. Like, and that's it. And then we move forward and a little bit of due diligence on everyone's part. We're going to be all right, and we can move ahead.
Right.
Hey, if you're tuning in right now, this is Gunner, and you're listening to Steel City Music. My special guest right now is Mike Maz. He has a new album out called Higher Love happening on November 26th. You can find it on pretty much all the streaming platforms. Mike, tell me the idea behind the video that you just released for Higher Love.
It was just a kind of... I just needed to get something out there for the single, and it was just a fun thing that I did at home. It's crazy what you're able to kind of do when just by yourself as a musician or whatever. The record was produced and recorded, and everything was done by me, mastered, and everything as well. And it was just a kind of a cool thing. I kind of looked at it afterwards, the video, and thought like the sweetest thing, kind of a YouTube vibe from it. But I had grander plans, but I just wanted to get something out before this single dropped next week on iTunes. With the pre-order of the album and stuff like that. So yeah, it was just something I put together on at home, and you know, it was just a, I actually recorded it last week, so it was just a fun little video that I did. So
good. Yeah, I was because I just saw that the other day that you released that, and I threw that up on the Steel City Music page. I think.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You have a show coming up on the Casbah when?
Mm-hmm. December 4th.
December 4th. So that's not that far away.
No, it's not.
Yeah, Casbah ticket link can be found on the Casbah website.
Yes, and through my Instagram page and our Facebook, the Facebook band page, and it's up all over the place. So, yeah.
Cool. And who is on the bill? Do you have anyone playing with you?
Let me see. Hold on one second. I want to get his name. I want to get his name right because I don't want to not get it right, if that makes sense.
Oh, I know. It makes sense.
Ellis Meek is opening for us. He was saying that he just moved to Hamilton before COVID. He's from Toronto. Great singer songwriter. He's got some really good stuff there. So I'm really looking forward to it with him. So yeah.
So hit up the Casbah website for tickets, or also it can be found on some of your streaming platforms.
Yep, and it's a matinee show, so it'll be done by 6:30, and then people can go on and do whatever else they want to do for the evening. So that would so we kind of planned it that way so that you guys have your evening free and you can see some music in the afternoon as well. So hey, this is Mike Maz. My new single Higher Love comes out on Friday. My new record of the same name comes out on November 26th. And if you're in the area, please pop down to the Casbah Hamilton on December 4th and check us out. We would love to see you. And it's time to love pop music again. And everybody needs a little higher love. So have a great, great time, everybody.
I think today is gonna be a good day. Whoa.
My next guest is putting on a show here in Hamilton, Ontario, on November 20th. The Holdouts, The Slime, Choices Made, and Scabs Off will be performing at the Doors Pub. It's the Doors Taco Joint and Metal Bar from Pale Horse Productions. It's Ryan Hilton. Hey, buddy, thanks for taking the time out of your day to have a chat.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me on the show.
So I was, of course, with Steel City Music, I've always like tell people what's kind of what's going on around town, music wise, where to go, the venues, kind of stuff. And yours came up into my news feed, and I'm like, oh, this is a little something different, especially now because we're coming out of this whole pandemic of COVID, and people are starting to open up again, and we're doing shows. But I was gonna like, well, maybe I'll just contact all the bands. But then I thought, you know what, I'm going to contact the promoter, because I never get a chance to talk to promotion companies of, you know, why they do it and that sort of thing. And I kind of want to get a backgrounder on you. How did Pale Horse Productions come about?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. Like, I've had a few people ask me this before, and I've had different responses for a lot of people, you know. I think what it comes down to is I wanted to get involved in the scene here. I had started to take a look around, like, you know, all the bands, all the local talent that we have in the GTA. And I kind of just wanted to see if I could kind of get my hands in there somewhere and try to, like, help out some people. So I have a background in project management. I've studied it at school. So I figured this was kind of like a good place to see if I could, you know, kind of just like focus in on that area and see if I could just, you know, help out some of the bands here.
Right. When you say the GT area, you're talking about all of Toronto.
Yeah. You know, like Toronto, all the surrounding areas, really. Like, I've worked with bands from Barrie even. So it's it kind of spreads out, you know.
Right. Hey, what style of music of shows do you put on? Is it just the metal and punk, or do you do different styles for different shows?
Well, so far I've got about five shows coming up, and it spans anywhere from like metal to like ska punk, or mostly punk. So like mostly in that genre, but mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to, you know, doing shows outside of that.
Is that your style of music that you enjoy?
For the most part, yeah. I'm pretty big into like metal music, so I guess you could say so. Yeah.
Right. Oh no, that only makes sense. It's something that you're passionate about. That's something that you get behind. It is always more enjoyable if you are promoting something that you love.
Yeah, for sure.
So how long have you been doing this for?
Well, Pale Horse Productions has been around since about June. Before that, I was doing a kind of like an internship for Canyon Media for about 5 months there that I just I wasn't really vibing with it all that much. Mm-hmm. So I figured I could just go off and do my own thing and kind of take what I learned from there and apply it to what I'm doing here. So I guess in total, maybe about since the beginning of the year, really.
Wow, man, it's you're picking a great time to start doing it now that we're coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's actually really convenient how like everyone's, you know, itching to play shows, so it's kind of it's a good time to jump in and try to help out a lot of people, right?
Right. Hey, if you're just tuning in right now, you listen to Steel City Music. I am your host. On the line with me right now is Ryan from Pale Horse Productions. He has a show coming up on Saturday, November 20th, at Doors Taco Joint and Metal Bar, featuring The Holdouts, The Slime, Choices Made, and Scabs Off. How do you go about the process of putting a show like this together? Do you just put a call out to some of the bands that you know, and then they do the avails with you, or is it like you sit through the music, that sort of thing?
Well, for this particular show, I was talking with the band The Slime a lot. Mm-hmm. They had reached out to me initially and said that they were looking for someone to help plan their shows. So I kind of took this up as my first chance really to do a live in-person show. So I kind of just kind of picked their brains a little bit, see who all they wanted to play with. And I kind of just built like a list of people to start asking. And the lineup that we're at now is kind of where we ended up with that. We kind of got, you know, the, I guess, the lineup of who exactly we wanted to play. And then we found the venue that we want. It's been kind of a hard show to plan, you know, with coming out of COVID and everything. We've had quite a few lineup changes, and we've had a venue change up also. So the show has been a challenge to plan, but we're kind of coming in on the home stretch here, so I'm feeling good about it.
What are your thoughts come summertime? Like, you said you got five shows on the go in different markets in Greater Toronto area. That's, you know, I mean, you have to stay on top of all those five shows. You got to have really great communication skills with everyone involved. What's your next step for Pale Horse? Do you want to start doing an average of like 5 to 10 shows a month? Is that something feasible? Or do you want to eventually get it up to like where you're booking something like a small tour of bands or like a festival type deal?
I've got a few things kind of that I'm thinking of doing. I would like to maybe at least be doing 2 to 3 shows a month. Maybe I'd like to get into some tour management. And me and a good friend of mine, we've started doing some, we're actually recording a band from Barrie right now. So we have an album coming out for these guys around the end of January. So with that, we're looking at hopefully doing some tour planning for them and kind of distribution for their album. So we've got a lot of things on the go right now. Hi, this is Ryan from Pale Horse Productions. Just want to tell you guys to come check out the show at Doors Pub, November 20th, with The Holdouts, Scabs Off, Choices Made, and The Slime. $15 at the door. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, you're here! See, this is Frank Terry, and let me repeat, the Rolling Stones free concert is going to be on tomorrow at the Altamont Speedway. Apparently, it's one of the most difficult things in the world to give a free concert.
It's creating a sort of microcosmic society, you know, which sets an example to the rest of America as to how one can behave in large gatherings.
Stephen Ponick, KSAN Radio, San Francisco. Well, the Rolling Stones' tour of the United States is over. They wound it up with a free concert at the Altamont Speedway for more than 300,000 people. There were four births, four deaths, and an awful lot of scuffles reported. We've received word that someone was stabbed to death in front of the stage by a member of the Hell's Angels. Nothing's confirmed on that. We were there. We didn't see it. But we did see a lot. We want to know now what you saw.
Hey, you're listening to Steel City Music. I am your host, Gunner. And my next guest is someone totally, totally interesting to me and to you. And here are the reasons why. It's so much to unpack right now as I introduce this guest. Because me, personally, I would go down to This Ain't Hollywood and go, who's that over there DJing? And I would be just like, oh, they're playing all this cool music. Where are they from? And then I find out they were doing a radio show at CFMU later. Then I find out there's a film podcast going on and she's doing it. And then now I found out that she's doing a film series at the Westdale. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so happy that she's taking time out of her day to figure out an interface in the studio that's brand new. And she's got it off flying. Music supervisor, DJ, and host of the Hamilton Film Podcast, Alicia Main. How are you?
Hi, Gunnar. Thank you so much. That was a lovely introduction, and it just made me realize I have way too many jobs.
you have a lot of titles in that, but it all kind of flows together because to me, when someone spins music and has interest in any style of music,
There's storytelling that goes along with it. There's an enjoyment when they hear music. And you've taken that to doing a film series at the Westdale. And just to let you know, on my last show or the show before, I did spin the trailer Festival Express. And some of the music, took the music from that documentary, and I put it on my show. I had no idea that there was this great Canadiana thing that happened on Via Rail, where it was a touring festival here in Canada at that time.
Yeah, that one was a really fun one to do. When we originally were talking about doing this series at the Westdale, it was November of 2020. And so that was the first one that I'd chosen as part of the series. And then unfortunately, we got locked down.
Sure.
And yeah. So I had to postpone it a year. But we had a real successful night. October 27th, we had our launch of the film series with Festival Express. We even had somebody in the audience that had attended the original festival, which is always fun. I don't know if we'll have that with the Stones one or not, but I'll definitely be asking for some Stones anecdotes from the audience.
Sure. And when I watched that documentary, I never had a chance to make it down, so I ended up watching it. I was just I was thrilled of the background that I was getting on everything, because there's I've always hear secondhand stories from everyone. Right. Like, you know, my peers will tell me a story. I was at this show and so-and-so said this. So I get really caught up in all of it. So when I was watching that, that particular one, I was marveled in the fact that everyone just assumed that everything should be for free. Let's just do this. And then myself from my age group now clicked in and went, dude, you got to pay. How do you think this concert is going to happen?
Yeah, I think the ticket prices were around, $10 to $14 or something like that.
Which would have been expensive for 1971, was it?
Yeah, in today's dollars, that's around $100.
Right.
So whether that, you know, to see about 20 bands in one day, whether that's a value to you or or not in today's money, you know, it was... expensive at the time. Also in 1970, the country was in recession as well. So that could have had an impact on people's kind of emotions around spending money. If we dig back into the actual history of the year, which is part right. of what I'm doing in the series, because Festival Express was 1970 and Gimme Shelter came out in 1970 as well. Although the Altamont concert, which heavily features in the documentary, was December 1969. That post Woodstock sort of period, which impacted both of those concert experiences, Altamont and Festival Express. Very different outcomes at both, but very interesting to kind of dive into them. But what I really love about the series is just being able to watch this amazing footage on a big screen in an audience full of people. It is almost like being there. Like at the Festival Express screening, we had people in the audience like cheering after they saw Janis Joplin, you know, because it's just so... Right. A lot of people have been lacking that live music experience, particularly big festivals. So it's just a great way to immerse yourself in that in a community setting. So I recommend any music fans get out and check it out, because it's just like these one night only kind of opportunities that you don't get very often to see these amazing documentaries.
Oh man, you're really rubbing it in because I missed it. Now that that's the enjoyment that I want because you're right. You're absolutely right. We've missed all these big concerts because of COVID. And to me, being able to see a little bit of history and music and culture on like something like that is great. But when I was watching that and I was thinking about all the other concerts that happened before, like Woodstock and some of the other ones when they were doing it, there is a political change that people are trying to make in that time period. There's a progression from the 60s and the death of JFK, and music reflects that from folk music and folk artists, that sort of thing, and Bob Dylan and all those subsequent artists that he's inspired. So, but when I look at some of the stuff in the 60s, as they're moving forward, they have this great belief that they can make great change. And when we get to Gimme Shelter, I mean, we've already done Woodstock. We've done some other big festivals at the time, like even the one that would happen down in New York in a certain area that was only, it was just a black festival. And I can't remember the name offhand.
The Summer of Soul documentary.
Summer of Soul, yeah.
Referring to, yeah.
Yeah. And then when we get to this Gimme Shelter documentary, it's so crushing in a way, because it just seems like the dream is done. The idea is done by the time we get, and I don't want to give it away, but I mean, there's certain points in this documentary where you could just see that everyone's still trying to put on this concert with the best of intentions and ideals.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, the Rolling Stones were at the top of their game in 1969, so they would have felt pretty invincible and had the world on a platter. And it was part of that, I think, that generation, that mindset at the time, that anything was possible. And, you know, it people took bigger risks and chances probably than they do now. However, you know, there's festivals still have disastrous ends even these days, as you know, there was that Astroworld festival out of Houston that just was a big disaster. I mean, it feels, yeah, like sometimes they don't learn the lessons, or like Woodstock 94 or 99.
Yeah,
that was the one that was like the terrible one, that was also a documentary just came out of. So yeah, it seems like they don't always learn the lessons of the of the time, and there's always a lot of idealism and in putting on music.
When you I'm just saying that I really hope everyone goes out and sees this, because it does put you know, a closure to that that era, where now you're going into the 70s and it's just stadium rock. It's just, there doesn't seem to have any purpose to it aside from entertainment, but there's no vibe right. In the early 70s, big giant stadium rock, and second in the 70s is a Stones album, really.
Yeah.
But with when I was watching this Give Me Shelter documentary, I kind of got mad. As I don't know what happened, but because I'm 52, I was in 1969, I was a baby, right? And my father and my mother and all that generation, they were very much, even though we're in Canada, they were very much hippies in a way. My parents would actually open the door to anyone to sleep on the couch, that sort of thing. If you were traveling, that sort of thing. Even when the Pink Floyd concert happened, my father was like cooking breakfast for all these people that were sleeping on our lawn. Right. And as a kid, you get those ideals. But as I got older and then I was witnessing this here, I kind of felt like I'm the man in this. Like I'm like, you shouldn't be doing that. Someone's going to get hurt, or, you know, it's strange. So by saying this to you, I'm wondering, come this, you know, when this happens for this documentary to be aired at the Westdale, will there be people who actually seen that concert and can relate the stories and their feelings compared to now?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, just going on the audience for Festival Express, there were people that were, you know, had lived and been attending concerts in the 60s. So they are, you know, have that firsthand, if as much as they can remember from that time. And then younger generations that are just kind of maybe discovered the Stones, like I did maybe about 20 years ago or so, when I started going to Stones concerts. So yeah, we get the spectrum of cultures, and I like to reflect on in the talk, just spend some time talking about what things were like then and what they're like now, and just merge those two worlds together in a way, and you know, bring them to what is currently happening. So one of the, you know, really positive things about Give Me Shelter after watching it now was how much footage of Charlie Watts exists in it, which I didn't notice, you know, didn't make note of before, but now since his passing, it's like, wow, it's so incredible that we have that footage of Charlie. He's pretty much in there, only second to Mick Jagger in terms of screen time, I think. So it's really you know, amazing to be able to, you know, watch him again on screen and kind of see a bit more of his personality.
The directors a part of this were Albert and David Maysles. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, you know what? I have to look up how phonetically to pronounce.
Okay,
but
this documentary was aired in actually 1971 at the Cannes Film Festival, and I'm thinking if this tragedy happens, and what kind of message was the role? I mean, the Rolling Stones agreed to be documented over a year's time, if not longer, and they're showing clips of Ike and Tina Turner at an earlier concert, and some different footage and that, and then you get this whole nice vibe of what the Stones are about and that feeling. But what I don't understand is in today's time and age, you wouldn't want to document something like this if that tragedy happened. It's like, just a, from a legal standpoint, like someone's going to sue you, and you know,
yeah.
So to me, it's kind of like it just doesn't jive with today's times as like protecting yourself legally. Like yeah. It really doesn't.
Well, and a lot of the footage is kind of showing the, you know, the aftermath of the, you know, festival and the reactions to the band members of, you know, some of the, you know, reaction that they're getting from the media and the promoters. And, you know, you can see kind of fear in the eyes of Mick Jagger at a time. But you could also, we have to believe that they would have had all, you know, full legal say over anything that would have been released. So there must have been, you know, like the lawyers would have been combing through it and okaying everything. I doubt right. that they gave the filmmakers just like, use whatever footage you want, you know, because you do get that image, like that impression, like the camera is acting kind of as like a fly on the wall in that scene. They're just documenting what's happening. There's no narration happening. There's just, no. It's really long kind of scenes that they've chosen to put in. So I intend in my talk, I don't want to give too much away in the talk, but digging in a little bit more of the backstory behind that and how it came about is all, you know, trying to give the liner notes to the film, I guess, as part of the talk. So that's something I'll definitely be digging into on November 24th, coming up pretty soon. Yeah.
And how do we get tickets? We just go to the website?
Westdale.ca. Yeah.
Okay. Super easy. So this is you.
Yeah.
You go out on stage and you're like, a little intro.
Yep.
Movie airs, and then you go right into the talk.
So yeah, I just briefly introduce the film, and then we watch it together, and then afterwards I get back up and we do more of an in-depth discussion about it once everyone's seen it and the footage is fresh in everyone's mind. That's when we really kind of dive in and the audience kind of gives their input as well into, oh, hey, I went to a Stones concert on that tour or something like that, right? So it's great right. to have that collaborative feeling in the room to see what everyone else's perspectives, because there's a lot of music fans in Hamilton, a lot of movie fans.
Yes, we know.
It's great to have everybody in the same room kind of enjoying it together. And you can have a beer or a wine while you're watching it. Yeah. It is kind of like being at a festival.
It's kind of like being in Hamilton, really. Yeah. So how long does it, like, does the Q&A last afterwards? Is it a 20-minute thing? Is it a half hour thing?
Yeah, about
that.
Like, you know, as long as we feel like we've covered a lot, the last one, I think, went, you know, about 20 minutes or so. You know,
right.
Not going too long. It's not like a lecture or anything.
Is it okay if I give everyone your personal email to get yeah. have more questions? Because I'm the type of person that goes home and about 20 minutes later goes, no one answered that question. Nobody answered that question.
Yeah.
No, I never got an answer.
Alisha@putarecordon.com. Alisha@putarecordon.com. That's where you can find all my projects on there too, that I'm involved in now. Yeah.
Well, okay. So we have Wednesday, November 24th, the Gimme Shelter.
Yes.
And then to close out the series, Heart Worn Highways is coming up on December 22nd.
Yes. It's not on the close of the series, is what we've announced so far, but we are.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was just three docs.
We're hoping to do into 2022 as well. We just haven't announced our next run of films, but we were just doing an initial run of these three, and then we'll be back in 2022 with some more. So, yeah.
Quickly, who did you choose these three films, or did you have a committee put together?
So I gave the Westdale a list of ones that I would love to have as part of the series. And then based on what they could get the license to exhibit, you know, that played into it. And also, so Ryan Ferguson was the curator right. behind this series to try to, I gave him my list and he kind of put his input in as what he thought would play well and also what they could get the rights to use. So they've definitely all been ones that I pre-selected as ones I would definitely would like to have. And I'm trying to, you know, I don't want to give away what, you know, ones that were in the works for 2022, but I do want to make sure that we're showing as much of a like diverse musically, you know, that we can. It seems like this one's really rock and roll kind of heavy. A lot of, you know, white male musicians for the most part, but it's really, I would like to show, you know, a bigger range of music as well, and eras and everything in this. But the 70s was a good place to start because it's, you know, probably my favorite era of music. So
thank you for taking the time to have a chat with us today. And before you go, just on a side note, So I know you're doing the podcast thing, which is super cool, right? The film, you're doing this, but I don't see anywhere where you're DJing anymore. Like, what's going on?
Oh, well, it's all the places I used to DJ are shutting down.
Okay.
No, that's actually I'm getting so busy with DJ gigs. I was just at DJ at the Westdale last weekend, actually, for the opening night of the film festival, and I'm just popping up in all kinds of events. So I'm definitely still out there doing that. So
you can't even do a show at CFMU anymore?
That I did have to let that go. I just, something had to give in my schedule. Like, I was sad because I want to do everything. It's like, I want to have a radio show. I want to have a podcast. I want to, all these other jobs. Right. So I had done it for, I think it was like six or seven years, and loved doing it. But it was time to, put my focus more on the film side of things. And so my slot that this Tuesday is at 1:30 has been taken the reins by Ginger St. James. It's the Wrecking Yard now that she's presenting. So I couldn't be happier with somebody carrying on the slot.
Awesome. Hey, thanks once again for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for giving us the platform to tell people about these documentaries. Hi, this is Alicia Main. Please join me for the Music and Film series at the Westdale Theater. We're going to be showing Gimme Shelter on Wednesday, November 24th at 7:30 p.m. Get your tickets at thewestdale.ca.
you're not looking at the tape. And I'm like, I wouldn't look in their f***ing eyes if... When you're in the scene together, it's fine. But, like, just had to stare back at the tape. I was feeling uncomfortable staring back at the tape. And so I don't understand these people who just keep eye contact the entire time through a conversation. It seems very uncomfortable to me. And so... I'm sure other people in my life, as I said, I told people that they diagnosed me with mild, and everybody's like, oh yeah, that sounds about
right.
That makes
sense.
That's about right. But I don't know if I do. I think people are different. I think people have their own personality traits. I think there's, some people are awkward. Now, there's obviously people who have complete Asperger's who, sure. You know, there's no question about it. But I think some people, we're all just wired a little bit differently, and that's how things work.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Command to internal.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Major Tom, this is ground control. We've done some check-in on that David Bowie you asked us about. It seems he's quite a rock and roll star. Possibly the greatest fresh talent to hit the scene since the Beatles. Melody Maker magazine's poll awarded him many top awards for 1973. Also found that his albums have met overwhelming success. We've learned that these albums, Space Oddity, Hunky Dory, Ziggy Stardust, Glad Insane, and his newest album, Pinups, are available at Disc Records for $3.89 or any three for $10. That's David Bowie at Disc Records, Town East, Six Flags, and Valley View. You hear me, Major Tom? You hear me? You hear me? Do you hear me?
You're listening to Steel City Music.
I don't know what that is. Like, I don't know why it's my favorite ID, but it's one of my favorite IDs that I made. I'm not even congratulatorying myself or patting myself on the back. I just love that early 70s radio station did that. I took that from like an archives, and I just think it's fantastic. David Bowie. I just love it. Of course, not quite. He doesn't say it quite like that. But that's like more of an Australian way of Bowie. But whatever. Do you hear me, Major Tom? Do you hear me? All right. Hey, you're listening to Steel City Music, and I'm the Goof Gunner. In this beautiful hour of music, we're going to do some shoegaze. Why shoegaze, Gunner? Because I was listening to some shoegaze the other day, and it sent me down the whole rabbit hole of shoegaze music I used to enjoy listening to in the early 90s, that sort of thing. And it kind of got pushed aside by grunge music in the early 90s when it came out, right? In Britpop. That became the predominant listening style of music in my circles. And I guess, you know, as far as like a mass of buying scale of genres. And I think shoegaze came out in like Ireland or something, like in the late 90s, right? Anyway, late 90s. No, sorry, late 80s. Yeah, that's what it was.